I know it's an unusual time, Saturday afternoon, the 13th of October. Sam Rachofsky here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Could not do the show yesterday. I was traveling, returning from Europe, from Zurich, where I was following my my stay in Prague. Now, I'm coming back to a dramatically different set of circumstances than from which I left, and I like it. Let me tell you, first of all, we have Justice Brett Kavanaugh confirmed sitting and at work at the United States Supreme Court. Sometimes it's better with a little bit of removal from a situation to be able to analyze it better. And I thought about this a great deal because a lot of people are wondering, how the hell did this even get pulled off? You remember just maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, with the allegations hotly swirling and the media, even people on the right, openly considering that perhaps Trump would be best advised to pull Brett Kavanaugh and nominate someone different in order to avoid a costly political boxing match with these Democrats and their goons in the media. You're thinking, how is it possible that this thing actually occurred? And it's tied, in my opinion, to the second question, which is, why does it matter? So why did it succeed? Why is Brett Kavanaugh on the court now? And why does it matter that the success occurred? Plain and simple, it succeeded because for some, and I'll explain why, but the GOP, the Republican Party, united in a way that it hasn't since the primaries of 2016. And actually, the reason for why it succeeded is why it matters. It matters. Well, let's step back here. First of all, you had a guy who, as you know, whether you like what his judicial perspective is or not. Let's say you're a Democrat. Let's say you're a left winger. Let's say you believe in a living, breathing, all feeling, compassionate constitution. A document that comes with its own Ouija board that if you can move it around depending on how you're feeling and how you're thinking and where you want it to go, that type of thing. If that's the kind of judges you want, Kavanaugh's not your guy. But you also are a decent human being and you want to live in a world where certainly victims of sexual abuse are heard, but where people cannot use unfounded allegations to completely destroy their opponents. You don't want to live in that kind of world. I know I don't. And what this entire process turned into was a referendum on whether we were okay with someone being destroyed like this. So it matters first because we found out that we don't live in a world where that's okay. At least it's not okay enough. And if you listened to Susan Collins' speech, you know, she was basically, it was all eyes on her last week when she delivered her speech on the floor of the U.S. Senate and laid out her case for Brett Kavanaugh. And it was everything you needed to know. And the left went bananas. They're out there right now claiming never give her a minute of peace. They're going to be following her around to restaurants. They're going to be following around her to her home. They're going to be staging protests at her office. To them, Susan Collins is a traitor of traitors. Well, there's some talk of Valerie Jarrett, a former Obama acolyte, inside woman in the White House, I think Obama's right-hand human, running against her in Maine. I don't think there's much of this. Look, it came down to decency. And people like Susan Collins and people like Senator Graham had that decency. But it matters in the greater political sense because it demonstrates that if you stare down the opposition, if you look Democrats and the vile garbage that they pull, if you look at them straight in the eye and stare it down and hold your ground, we can prevail. And it is an absolute golden reminder of why Trump is the right guy for the job and why, of all the people that were running back in 2016, Trump was the president best suited for our era. Now, there's, you know, one of the things here is some lament on the part of the media and on the left that the Never Trump movement within the Republican Party is dead, right? That with Senator Graham, with Lindsey Graham backing the president, the most prominent, and also we have the passing of Senator John McCain. So with these shifts occurring, there seems to be a great deal of unity. This Kavanaugh fight brought the Republican Party together. And I'm going to tell you, this is half right and half wrong. The idea is that Trump joined the fight. The idea is that the Senate Democrats were incensed. Trump joined the fight, backed his guy, and somehow spontaneously, by virtue of the fight that the Democrats put forward and the smear attacks that they used to ruin Brett Kavanaugh, is sort of the reason that this, you know, poof, this sort of happened. And suddenly the old divisive conflict that was swirling about between various factions of the Republican Party eased and evaporated. This is not entirely true. You've got to understand that there was a calculated effort here on the part of Trump to ally himself with Senate Democrats. You remember the context, the timing, when the Brett Kavanaugh nomination was announced. You will remember that it was one of the times, this was months ago now, during that time, there were prominent divisions between Trump and the Senate Republicans. And even certainly with other congressional Republicans in the House. You had during this time a dying John McCain making it his, well, making it the refrain of his swan song to target anything and everything that was Trump related. And Trump wisely did something. You know, he had other people on the list, right? He had other names that people tell me he preferred. Other judges that were higher up on his list. But Trump, this was extremely wise. He went to Senate leadership. He went to McConnell, Senate Majority Leader. And he said, who do you think you can get through? Because remember, understood from the get-go, as soon as Justice Kennedy announced that he was retiring from the court. And Kennedy represents something called the swing seat. You hear this a lot, the swing vote on the court, because Kennedy was appointed by a Republican. He was a conservative guy, so to speak, but he oftentimes sided with the left wing of the court. And there has been this sense, or there was this feeling, this argument on the part of unhappy leftists that the seat ought to be filled by somebody a la Kennedy. Which, of course, is total nonsense. That's not what we want. We want a court that is interpreting the Constitution as written. And for that, we don't need a liberal. But at any rate, Trump understood, his people told him, and he believed them, and he listened to them, that this was going to be a knockout, dragout fight. And he understood that you can only wage war with so many people at the same time. So he goes to McConnell and he says, you guys, you pick, you never Trumpers, right? He doesn't say this, but thinking it. All you people that hate my guts, you tell me who I need to, you tell me the guy I need to pick. Here's my list. By the way, it's a list that the Heritage Foundation put out, not a list, you know, I came up with, you know, eating McDonald's takeout and chugging Diet Coke. I mean, this is something that you know, during the campaign, the Heritage Foundation put forward a list of judges, and he took that list and campaigned on a promise to select judges from that list. And you'll remember that when the Kavanaugh name was put forward, there were a lot of sighs on our side of the aisle. A lot of the people out there, big time conservative names, commentators, pontificators, and legal analysts were saying, well, this Kavanaugh guy, he's too, Bush White House and, right? Remember all that? Well, as it turns out, it was exactly the right move. Now, look, you make a decision. If it doesn't work out, you're an idiot. If it works out, you're a genius. So the benefit goes to Trump here. To me, from my vantage point today, looking back at all of this, he looks like a genius. And the reason for that is they knew there was going to be a fight. They knew it was going to be a tremendous ordeal. And so what do they do? The White House selects a guy that has universal backing from the Senate Democrats and from the Republican Party establishment. When the Kavanaugh confirmation thing was going down in flames, who was behind the scenes making phone calls to all the rhino Republicans in the Senate, convincing them that Brett was a good man? None other than George W. Bush. And there were others that were involved in that process too. But as the old saying goes, the enemy, if you've got a common enemy, you are united in your fight against that enemy. And this fight united all these folks, and I am telling you, created a bond that you will see having some lasting effect. And when you take where's this poll? Overwhelmingly among independents, there is an enormous disapproval of the way the Senate Democrats handled the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation. Independent voters, people who are not necessarily tribally political, are disgusted. If you look at individual races in more red-leaning states, for example, in Texas, going into the Texas election here with this, we got a big Senate race. Got Beto O'Rourke running against the incumbent there, Ted. So you've got that race that was a dead heat 2 months ago, where they were worried, right? They were looking at that saying, hey, we potentially could have a loss here. We could lose a Republican seat in the Senate. I mean, we got Republicans up seven points. This is enormous. And the tide turned when the Democrats went full bananas on Brett Kavanaugh and threw all decency, all humanity, all credibility out the door. This is not who we are as a people. It's not who we are as a country. And this is one of the great gifts that Trump continues to deliver on a day-by-day basis. He has the opposition so riled up, so convinced that he is the great Satan incarnate, that they are willing to throw everything at this and give up any shred of decency. And the best example of this, of course, being the most recent pronouncements about, Hillary saying, we've got to fight back. It doesn't matter how we fight back. Whatever we do, we got to fight back. Eric Holder saying Obama's former attorney general. If when they go low, we got to kick them. Talking about the opposition. This is keep this up, guys. Everything you're doing, everything, all of this is only going to wreak political havoc and destruction. and will retain Republican majorities in the House and Senate next month. So why does it matter? Truth prevailed. A decent man was confirmed. We have kept our soul as a country. And in fact, I think we have had a degree of healing on the right, and have allowed have finally some modicum of cooperation between Trump, between the White House and congressional Republicans, which is nice moving forward. So what was that Kanye thing all about? Did that happen this week while I was on the road? I have some thoughts on that, as well as Taylor Swift, too, is getting political. This is all connected. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Robbie is not here. He is on a boat on a lake in the middle of nowhere. So that's what that is. And good news is we have a substitute filling in for the great producer Robbie is Vera and Ava Murjovsky. Are you? Yep. Yeah. That's right. There you are. They are here in the studio with me Saturday afternoon, and it's great. I missed you guys. Was it hard? Was it hard with me out of town, or was it kind of fun? What's kind of what? So. Wait, you're supposed to miss me. What is this? Oh, they did miss me. Okay, all right. Well, that's better. Next time, I'm not bringing you anything back if you keep that up. Well, anyway, they're here. Dr. Audio working the board. So we've got a skeleton crew, and Robbie, you're missed. Look forward to seeing you soon. Now, I will tell you this: I didn't get to see the so-called Kanye meltdown in the Oval Office live. But because as I was away, as I was in Europe, I had Twitter on, and I'm following generally when things begin to blow up, I'm getting a lot of notifications. And as it was happening, Twitter literally exploded. And you know that there was a cut in. If you saw this, if you're watching the regular news, broadcasts were interrupted on CNN, on MSNBC, certainly Fox News, to carry this live. It wasn't a press conference. They were just – Trump was behind his desk in the Oval Office. Kanye was sitting opposite it, as you would if you were visiting with somebody inside their study or whatnot. And you had a throng of reporters behind him. The only angle I've seen is one looking toward Trump with Kanye kind of down at the bottom. And the room looks like it is packed with reporters. Now, how have you heard this Kanye thing characterized? Bizarre? Is that one of the words? Bizarre meltdown. I heard that characterization. So I watched it a couple of different times, and it was anything but that. Well, it was spectacular in the sense that it was absolutely freewheeling. And I wouldn't necessarily characterize Kanye West as a born public speaker. But a lot of what he was saying made sense. And I'll tell you what, one of the critical things, he's in there. He's talking about why he's with Trump and not with Hillary. And his explanation, plain and simple, is why is the expectation that I, as a black man, automatically belong to the Democratic Party? And he talks about welfare, and he says, look, welfare is one of the reasons why a lot of times blacks are more likely to side with the Democratic Party. And then he goes on to explain exactly correctly why welfare is so devastating in black communities that it replaces fathers. Something he speaks of from experience being raised by his mother. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting to me. I'm curious in the weeks ahead what kind of effect this will have. No doubt, here is a guy who has built himself into something out of nothing. Not a person who was born into any kind of wealth. His music, I don't get it. We've played clips of it here. It's bizarre. And I know he has a following. There's some of you here that are fans of the program and love yourselves a little bit of Yeezy. I'm not here to knock you. It's just not my thing. But I really, really, really find it objectionable when we have a self-made black entrepreneur who is explaining to people why he likes Trump and why he's conservative and have them completely turn on him as being some sort of a nut job. And that's the depth to which the left right now has lost touch with reality. And I just, like I said before, keep at it, guys. Keep at it. It's off-putting and certainly will not result in any sort of political victories for you. Okay. Yeah, I need to explain, though. Now, what do I think about this as far as entertainers mixing entertainment with politics? I'll give you my comments on that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation back in town, back behind the orange curtain here, deep, deep in conservative territory in Orange County. Yes, flew in late last night, could not do the program because we were, so to speak, in the air and now are back firmly on the ground and ready to rock and roll. Saturday the 13th here in the afternoon. Not our usual time for doing the show, but it's working out and we're moving forward here. So one of the things Kanye says in that press conference with Trump is that wearing the hat makes him feel like Superman. Meaning the red MAGA hat. I would summarize that part of the interview as basically saying the hat made him a billionaire. So he puts on the hat. He gets a lot of ridicule. He stands up to the ridicule. It gives him more confidence. In turn, he's able to do that deal with Adidas, which I think he's referring to the deal where he makes some shoes that are called Yeezys. If you're not cool like me... Bill, do you know what a Yeezy is? Have you ever heard? Okay, it is kind of a nasty looking sneaker that looks like, well, it looks like you took a regular sneaker and you dipped it in a vat of plastic, of heated up plastic. You just kind of dipped it in there and then you slowly took it out and you went, you kind of blew on it and it dried. And that's what a Yeezy looks like. Now, Bill, if I told you these things are sold out, I think they go for, there's a black market in Yeezys, and that's, I'm not it's not a racist term. I'm just saying there's an entire internet marketplace for these things. And they're trading for hundreds and hundreds of dollars per pair. So anyway, Yeezys, Adidas, he does a deal. And that's really what takes him from being a millionaire to a billionaire. He does his deal with these shoes. And it's all because of the Make America Great Again hat. Now, I kind of get this. If you've ever worn a Make America Great Again hat in we'll call it mixed society. Well, have you had to deal with any adversity? Of course you have. So you think it's because you're Kanye West, there's no such thing as adversity? Think again. If you're a Hollywood person and you come out and you get up there and you do a pro-Hillary rally, or you do a pro, I don't know, Beto O'Rourke or Beto, whatever his name is, running in Texas against Ted Cruz, or you do a rally for Kevin De Leon or Miss Ocasio-Cortez. Well, you do these rallies, you're feted on the left, right? Everybody's like, yay, yay. The best example of this is Taylor Swift, right? She came out a couple weeks ago, broke longstanding tradition, and I frankly think good judgment of hers, to stay out of politics. And so what she did was she endorsed the Democrat running in Tennessee, kind of gave in to a lot of pressure and hate that she was getting on Twitter for not getting political. She gets political. Now she's talking about registering for the Democratic Party, doing this and that. Honestly, when it comes to selling albums or sneakers or anything, if you are an entertainer, if you are making a product X, whatever it is, politics only can hurt you. I don't see it being a net positive thing, but there is one. We're going to go long here. I want to explain this because this is critical. There's one big difference between what Taylor Swift did and what Kanye did. What is it, Sam? There's no difference. In fact, by the way, I saw Piers Morgan was doing a thing about this on Good Morning Britain. Which is like Good Morning USA or Good Morning America, whatever it is. It's their show over there. ITV has it, and I was in Zurich in Switzerland, and they had it, that channel on television. I was watching him talk about this, and Piers Morgan, a pretty funny guy, but he's talking about this. He goes, "It's the same thing. What Taylor's doing, what Kanye's doing, it's bad for business. They should stay out of politics. Shut up and sing." And I have one little caveat to it, though Pierce isn't wrong. It's the advice is true for both people. But who's the underdog? In other words, of the two political groups, which one feels marginalized? Now, at first blush, you'd think, well, the party in power, Trumpists, you know, they're the bullies, right? They're the people that have all the power right now. And it's the left that feels that they're ostracized and such. But I would argue it's a little bit different. I think in popular culture and in society right now, being a Trump hater is a pretty good place to be. And I observe this as I travel around the world. I observe this as I meet people here at home. I just, you know, if when you say that you don't like Trump, how about in school? Vera, I got my kids here. I'm going to ask. These are the people that have all the answers. Do kids at school like Trump? You have no idea. Oh, come on. No, some people don't. We've talked about this. Yeah, some people don't. No. Now, have you ever told anybody at school that you like Trump? Why not? Why haven't you told them that you like that you don't like Trump, or that you like Trump? What? Well, see, that's it, right? You don't want to tell anybody. You don't even want. And by the way, Vera's in the second grade. This is wisdom from an almost 8-year-old. You want to stay away from the topic, right? I get it. And the reason that we want to stay away from the topic, you know this because you do this at home. You want to stay away from the topic because you don't want to deal with the backlash. Nobody gives you, nobody, everywhere I go, where in my social circles, I don't get any, I don't see anybody getting any backlash for not liking Trump. But if you're a Trumpist, if you want to wear the red hat, you're going to get a lot of hate. And so the people that love Trump are a little bit underground, feel a little bit crapped on. And so when they see a guy like Kanye putting himself out there and getting MSNBC to crap all over him, right? When they see that happening, I think it potentially, and it depends on the type of product that you have, but it potentially can create some marketing upside because you now suddenly have loyalty from 40%, 50% of America, give or take, who are saying, yeah, you know, thanks for speaking up for me. But I don't know how to what extent that affects, you know, rap music or whatever it is that he does, because I don't know. And how many people in middle America are going to go out and buy $800 sneakers? I don't think too many. All right. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yeah, 3 days ago, or 2 days ago, Jim Acosta on CNN had a meltdown that Kanye used the word mother effer while in the Oval Office. didn't Bill Clinton say suck it in the Oval Office? I mean, I don't want to be... really? Is this where CNN is now placing their outrage? For me, it's consistency. It always is with these things. So Obama had a dirty mouth himself, and frequently would say things. He had some hot mic comments that were picked up in the Oval Office as well. Look, this is all this. It is, listen, these people at CNN, at MSNBC, at the New York Times, the Washington Post, they are ideologues. Everything having to do with their analysis of what's going on right now is ideologically based and affected. Right as that press conference with Kanye ended, it was pretty funny. It cut back to... who was it? Ali Velshi and his co-host there at MSNBC. And the first words out of Velshi's mouth was, that was an assault on our White House. Really? An assault on our White House, having a successful minority businessman coming in talking about his ideas and his thoughts, that's bad? I don't get it. I just don't get it at all. Anyway, all right. So as we continue today, I need to get into what happened earlier in the week in Istanbul. If you have not been following the story about this Washington Post reporter, I think you need to. I think you need to pay attention to it, and it matters. And it will become a very important, dominant story in the weeks ahead. So please let me set this up for you and give you a little bit of some analysis here when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, deep behind the orange curtain, reporting the truth and nothing but the truth. By the way, Vera, where did your sister go? Oh, okay. Just make sure we don't lose her. I've got my girls here in the studio, and they are drawing and helping man the board there with Dr. Audio, to his great delight. Okay. Jamal Khashoggi. Who is this guy, and why is he important? He is, or at least was, a reporter, wrote articles for The Washington Post, and a prominent critic of the Saudi royal family. And what seems to have happened here is that he was in Turkey. He hasn't been back in Saudi Arabia since 2017 because what happened is his criticism didn't earn him a lot of love from the Saudi government. And so what they did, first they banned him from Twitter, and then they said he couldn't make any more public pronouncements. So he ends up moving abroad. He has a fiance who is Turkish. But my understanding, he spent most of his time in and around Washington, D.C., and was a contributing writer, as I mentioned just a second ago, to The Washington Post. So there you have it. This guy was a writer and considered a fairly authoritative figure on the Saudi royal family. He'd been previously quite close to them and then had grown increasingly concerned with the direction that the new Prince bin Salman has been taking the country, and became quite a vocal critic. So at any rate, on October the 2nd, which is about 11 days ago, Mr. Khashoggi goes to the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Now, it's a consulate. You know what the difference, basically. You've got embassies and you've got consulates. An embassy is the main place where the ambassador is in a country. It's almost exclusively always in the capital. Now, the capital of Turkey is Ankara. So you have consulates are like, I don't know, small satellite embassies. But Istanbul is a very important city in Turkey. So the consulate there is quite large. And I'm looking at these pictures and it looks like it's quite a big compound. And across the street or down around the corner, whatever it is a residence for the consul general, who is the head of a consulate. Now, for those of you who have not done a lot of traveling and are not aware of how this all works, a embassy, a consulate, any type of diplomatic station of this type, is considered sovereign territory of the nation that controls it. We recently went to renew the girls' Dutch passports. Do you remember when we went that, when we were up in San Francisco? Okay. And do you know, technically, Vera, I'm going to ask you, technically, when we went into the Dutch consulate, do you know that we weren't in the United States anymore? That we were actually in the Netherlands? Illegally speaking, that's how it works. It's really cool. If you step into the lobby of that office that we were in, you were in a foreign country. It's like that. So this territory, whenever you have an embassy, you can't just enter it. And if you've watched any good James Bond movies, you know how all this stuff works. So Khashoggi, he knows that the Saudis have it in for him. He knows that he has really pissed off their new ruler, the young prince. He knows that he's in trouble. And yet he's got to file some divorce document to prove that he's divorced so he can marry his new fiance. So he gets lured into the embassy and basically never comes out. Now, today I read that basically his Apple Watch, he had pressed a record function on his Apple Watch. And even though he did not have his phone with him, the Apple Watch recorded his interrogation, his torture, and murder inside of the embassy. Now, I'm here to tell you that as you hear that story unfold, know that it is 100% BS. Okay? I've got an iWatch, I've got an iPhone, I know a little bit about how technology works. It's doable, yes, but I'll tell you what really happened here. In my opinion, he's dead. And everything that is being said about it is true. But it didn't get recorded by his watch, folks. Don't be that naive. The Turkish government has that consulate wired up and down. And they don't want you and I to know, they don't want the Saudis to know how and what their surveillance methods are. So what we know is this. We know that there is a high level of confidence of what occurred inside that embassy. We know this guy was more than likely murdered and chopped up into little pieces and disposed of. It's terrible. It's ugly. But now let's ask us ourselves why this all matters. Trump was asked earlier today, or maybe last night, what are you going to do about this? What is this? Because, of course, naturally, we are very close to the Saudis. They're our allies in the Middle East, have long been our allies, way before Trump has ever become president. And they're people that we generally need in order to operate in the Middle East and to counter dangerous players in the region like Iran. So Trump says, well, you know, I'd rather not say if I've spoken to anybody, but the answer is yes, I have. I have spoken to the Saudis. And he says, then when pressed at what levels, if it was high level, he said very high level, and ultimately added the highest level. Now, as I looked at that press conference, it's interesting because if you go to CNN and you see what they're saying, I mean, they're already going down the road with Trump's business ties with Saudi Arabia, and that he's not going to criticize him. He's not going to do anything. You've got a problem that you've got somebody who's got, and I don't know, he wasn't a U.S. citizen, but he had residency here in the U.S. He had ties to the United States. And we sort of are the type of country that don't necessarily take kindly to our people being chopped up into little bits and sent home in Ziploc bags. So we don't like that. And it'll be very interesting to me to see what this occurs, because it creates an enormous pickle for us. And the pickle is this. In the grand scheme of things, what do we care more about? I mean, here we have a serious problem, a human rights problem. But on the flip side, we have a vested interest in decimating Iran's capabilities in expanding their power and abilities and capabilities in the region, in the Middle East. And our best bet here is to have an ally, a military ally capable of countering Iran. The other problem here, and this is one I haven't heard a lot of talk about yet, but is we also have a government right now in Saudi Arabia that at first blush, at least, seems to be moving away from its radical Islamic roots. It's not an easy question. Imagine for a minute that you're Trump. Imagine that you have to make a decision here. You don't like them doing this, because who's to say the next guy won't be a U.S. citizen or won't be somebody, you know, perhaps even more valuable on some level. But you also need to maintain ties with the government in a country that is capable of representing our interests in an area where our interests are extremely key and vital. Without a strong American-backed Saudi Arabia, you have players such as Iran, certainly Iran, and there are others, who would spread their influence and who would cause trouble and frankly, are far more radical. It's a difficult situation. So these things, as this story unfolds, I think this is going to be a really big story because we're already seeing that Trump is taking this seriously. And Trump's a plain-speaking guy, and he doesn't want to speculate yet the way I am about what happened, although I'm just – the way it's all coming to be here, I think they've got this thing on tape that the Turkish authorities are very certain. I think this is something that the Saudis are absolutely capable of doing. But I also think it's interesting that while you're hearing it being characterized as Trump hedging on this – and being, I don't know what the word is, being sort of passive toward the Saudis. I'm not hearing that. I'm actually hearing a very strong opinion about this. And I think that can potentially create problems for us down the road because we need the Saudis to be allied with us. So one thought I had on this actually is that it could create a power struggle within Saudi Arabia. Remember that the Prince bin Salman, the young, he's 30, I think 33, maybe 35, young guy who was selected to become the crown prince. And so he, when King Saud dies, he will be the next king of Saudi Arabia, but is already exerting quite a bit of authority. Remember, he imprisoned a number of the country's billionaires, including bin Alawid, who was the big investor on Wall Street. Well, you know, he threw the guys in jail, makes them pay billion-dollar fines. You think those guys are pretty happy with him? Farah's like, no, they're not happy with him. And are these guys that have some power? Well, certainly. I mean, they're part of the royal family. They've got tremendous resources, friends in the West, that type of thing. This may be, if what happened, you just may be one of those things where MBS, those are his initials, Mohammed bin Salman, and we stepped a little bit over the line. Just enough to lose the credibility that he desperately needed in order to get his footing secured. And it could be just the thing that ends up really getting him done. And the big winner in this right now, lack of stability over there, damage to our relationship with the Saudis, the big winner is Iran. And of course, Israel and other allies in the region, big losers. So we have to watch this thing very closely. I think it's fascinating stuff, and it is. Likely this is what happened, and it's straight out of some James Bond deal. It's really sinister stuff. So we'll watch this closely, and hoping for a happy outcome. All right. Don't go anywhere. More on the day's happenings and some catch-up, maybe a little bit of a trip report. Girls, do you have anything to say? Yeah, that's a yes. All right, we'll be back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. We have some guests in the studio as advertised. They have stepped in from the control booth and are now in the studio. Yeah, Vera.
Hi.
And Ava.
Hi.
Yes. Sisters. Now, okay, who's the older sister?
Me. And which is Vera.
Which is... All right, now, parents, Parents, and if you're not a parent, trust me, if you have kids, you're going to have one of these situations arise. There have been some things happening in our house.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, that's right. Now, what happened is this. Miss Ava has discovered what happens when Vera, you want to tell the story?
No.
Well, what happened? What happened, Ava? What did you do?
She cut her hair.
Yes. Yeah, so here's what happened. So Ava found some scissors. And what was this, like 4 weeks ago now? Like 4 weeks ago, you cut your hair. And what did we tell you to do? Not to cut it?
She lost scissors.
Oh, you lost scissors, huh?
She's not allowed to use scissors anymore unless she's at school.
Ava, is this true? Well, people can't hear you nodding your head. What happened?
I don't do it anymore.
That's good. Now, I don't know. Too bad, really. This is radio. We need to get a Sam Nation cam because you're pretty, it's pretty cute. Now, did you only cut your hair in the front?
I think she did it back here, too.
You have to be closer to the microphone.
I think she did it in the back.
Did you do it in the back, too? No, I think she's just in the front.
Okay.
So anyway, so Ava gives herself bangs. And parents, you know what this is about. Oh, so and of course, you know, it's, what is it, October? Just in time to do Christmas pictures.
And school pictures.
Oh, yeah, and school pictures. So now for kindergarten, when you get to be older and you look back at your kindergarten pictures and you see your cute little bangs that you have, yeah, what are you going to remember?
That she cut her own hair.
Okay, Vera speaking for both of them, I guess, yeah. Yep, but you did it too, Vera.
Once,
well.
And not as bad as Ava.
Not as bad as her. Okay, well, anyway, so that is the big update. This is all that's been happening as I was... The second time happened when I was out of town, or was that when you cut the doll's hair?
The doll.
Oh, boy. Yeah, there's also a doll that got shorn. At any rate, well, cuties, I missed you guys. I'm glad to be back.
I miss you so much. I miss you more. I miss you the most.
Well, I love you. All right, there you have it. Sam Rejofsky, say hello to our guests here, Vera and Ava. And I'm glad you guys could come into the studio. All right, go
Bye.
Take over for Robbie. Love you guys.
Okay, that's my job.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, all right. Last night we had a big storm here, heavy rain, some wind, a small twig broke off my lemon tree, and I lost one lemon. It really puts into perspective what's happening in Florida. Hurricane Michael devastating the coast in and around Mexico Beach. If you saw these pictures... As a Californian, right? I mean, this is not a typical thing for us to experience here. We have earthquakes from time to time. And granted, we get no advance notice of them, which I think is the only disadvantage. But otherwise, I have never – I mean, I suppose I have, but – if you look at the pictures of Mexico Beach, which is a small my understanding of just a tourist – trap type of town, but nonetheless, a fairly picturesque place. Everything is gone. It's just gone, right? It's Category 4 storm. It hit right there. It was ground zero for landfall. And there's there are no intact structures that can be seen anywhere in several square miles. So a tremendous amount of destruction. And also an interesting thing right now, because Florida's got some heated political races going on. You've got Gillum running against a Republican there and for governor. And that race is very, very heated and contested. Apparently, the Republican continued to run ads, some attack ads, in the wake of the hurricane. And that didn't go over too well with the Gillum folks. So the Gillum people put out a cease and desist order, went to court, actually, to enjoin the GOP from ceasing those ads. They withdrew the ads voluntarily. It's an ugly race, but it is interesting to see what effects a hurricane like that will have. Too early to tell. Certainly, I think there's some degree of voter suppression. Florida's just a very interesting place right now because of a tremendous population shift of influx, actually of hurricane refugee influx from Puerto Rico. We've talked about this before. So a state that has been more red than blue traditionally may very well be shifting blue, and it doesn't necessarily matter. The gubernatorial race doesn't necessarily have any great implications on national politics. Only that if this is a race that goes to the Democrat, could be a signal that the state may not be a reliable Trump state in 2020. And that, of course, is something that that political watchers of all stripes are very closely monitoring because, well, Florida's got a large number of electoral votes, very important, very difficult for Trump to win re-election if he doesn't get Florida. So believe you me, when it comes to hurricane cleanup in Florida, Trump is going to be all over this. Expect for him to be to instruct FEMA to not hold back any amount of funding to get it done, and of course that means more federal spending to buy votes. Not my idea of something I particularly enjoy, but that is what's going to be happening there, and those are the reasons for it. All right, Sam Rzhovsky here. We'll take a quick timeout and be back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. All right. In the wake of Hurricane Maria in 2017, of course, population shifts. I mentioned this, people moving from Puerto Rico back to a mainland USA, generally settling in Florida. And that has created some electoral shifts in the great state of Florida. Now, I'll say this. There are other electoral shifts that are happening the other direction. Something very interesting is occurring in this era of Trump, and it bears a reminder that we are in the midst of a certain momentous shift in our political situation. And what I mean by this is I think the political lines of who's a Republican and who's a Democrat are getting redrawn. It's happened at various points of our history in the past. Reagan, for example, attracted a great number of Democrats to the Republican Party. Now, those newcomers to the party often were at odds with some of the more establishment-level Republicans. Reagan had his own conflicts with establishment Republicans in his time. Much the same way that Trump has a problem with establishment Republicans here. Now, there are still Republicans today that hate Trump, that loathe Trump, that will not go out and vote for Trump. Some may even go out and vote for a Democrat in 2020. But on balance, what I see is a tremendous shift of people. And I see it. I'm interacting with them. I know, and you do too. You've run into them. Longtime Democrats who have had it with their party. The Me Too movement. Guys, Democrats, or if you're listening, the Me Too movement and it being weaponized, its means of destructing opponents' careers, is a non-starter. It is a turnoff. Nobody liked McCarthyism when Joe McCarthy was going after communists. Nobody likes this movement either. And the same with this politics of personal destruction business and being violent and basically embracing Antifa tactics, that too is not a winner. So much so that there was an opinion piece in the New York Times. And this piece, quite interestingly, pulling it up here, this was written, who had this thing? Excuse me while I get this. Aha, here we go. Brett Stevens, October 12th. The Democrats are blowing it again. Now, here's the deal. Real Clear Politics, he writes, talking about the website that goes through all the polling data, gave the GOP a lock on 47 seats in the Senate with 9 toss-ups. Today, it's 50-6 with races in Tennessee, Texas, North Dakota, increasingly leaning right. Donald Trump's approval rating is also up from a month ago. Now, Stevens writes here, this was not supposed to happen. Not during a midterm when the opposition party almost always gained seats. Not after 21 months of Trumpian chaos. Not after Me Too. Not after Christine Blasey Ford's emotional testimony and Brett Kavanaugh's angry retort. And yet it is. Predictably, once again, liberalism has pierced its own tongue. And he goes on to explain, what does that mean? Talks about Hillary Clinton telling Christiane Amanpour that you cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. Former Attorney General Eric Holder talking about when we go low, we kick them. All this fanaticism, this crazy just insanity continues over and over again. Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, making a spectacle of themselves during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. Cory Booker talking about being Spartacus, the whole country laughing at him. He's a joke. We have Chuck Schumer talking about making this confirmation hearing a political test, putting his entire credibility down on the line, only to have it all blow up. Turned into a total political stunt, and it's backfiring, and they are tone deaf to figure it out. Meanwhile, let's look at it. We got a new NAFTA. This is all the stuff Trump's doing. Got a new NAFTA. Republicans are pushing through. Finally, it looks like they're getting funding for the border wall, pushing that issue forward. We have great successes internationally. We've got an economy with a record low unemployment, record high GDP. Everything, all indicators are that this economy is red hot in a way it never was under Bush or under Obama. And the reasons for it are clear. Got a president whose rhetoric, while it gets criticized for being oftentimes rude and unseemly, whose rhetoric actually is pro-business and anti-government, and this is exactly what America needs. So, there's a lot to rejoice over. It's been a good week. I will be back here with a regular show, regular time, on Friday, this coming Friday, so fear not, and we will... we will get everything addressed then. Appreciate all of you. Thank you for being patient with me as I've been out of town. And look forward to having producer Robbie back in the studio. And thank you to Vera and Ava. Thanks, guys. You did great. Bill, thank you for coming in on a Saturday. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend, guys. Talk to you soon. Keep on rolling.